Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, March 19th, 2021. Section A. Officials. Reliable water source for county residents is possible. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Is water coming to the county? It appears officials with Midland County, the City of Midland, the Midland County Utility District, and the Midland County Freshwater District are close to making it a reality. Officials with the four entities will meet Friday to talk about a plan to provide a reliable water source for up to 40,000 people south and east of Midland city limits. Jay Edwards of the engineering firm Parkhill Smith & Cooper talked to the Reporter Telegram this week about the prospects. The plan requires the four entities to enter into an interlocal agreement, which would allow for two projects that will be outlined and presented Friday. The first project helps with short-term and intermediate-term water solutions, according to Edwards. He said it involves tying into the city's distribution system in two different places. Edwards says the county would fund the project that would provide the reliable source of water for county residents that choose to participate and allow greater movement of water through certain pipes in southeast Midland. He said once the four entities sign off on the agreement, that the work can begin almost immediately and that it is possible to have water available for those in the district within a year. There are people desperately in need of water right now, Edwards said. The second project sets in motion the development of the well field that county commissioners purchased in 2016 in Winkler County. It is called Rourke Ranch. Officials want to transport that water to Midland County through the city-owned T-Bar Ranch. Edwards said the second project not only develops a long-term water source for residents in Midland County Utility District, but adds 40% more capacity to what is in place right now at T-Bar and Clearwater Ranches in Winkler County. Edwards said the residents in the city would benefit with this arrangement as the utility district would pay transport fees to use the pipeline and that additional revenue can help the city retire debt on the pipeline infrastructure. The plans check a lot of boxes, according to Edwards. The freshwater district will operate well the well fields, city residents are not harmed, and county residents have that reliable source of water. He said county and utility district offices are ready to move forward, and the same can be said with those from the freshwater district. It will take the city council to sign off on the plan. Edwards said city staff is comfortable with the plan and believes that all questions can be answered in the next month. Edwards said the Midland County Utility District will operate like the city's utility department. Residents in Midland County can choose to sign up and get connected, and bills will go out just like they do for city residents. 40,000 are not going to sign up right away, Edwards said. Once a water source is established, the four entities might be able to take advantage of Texas Water Development Board grants and EPA funding. He also said this project will be a good story of cooperation between entities, and that is good for the community. Local officials not told about HHS plans to stop bringing migrants to Midland. By Caitlin Randall. C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Local officials said Thursday they were not notified of the federal government's plans to stop bringing migrants to Midland County and learned of the decision after it was reported by news outlets. The Associated Press reported Thursday afternoon that a Health and Human Services official said there were no plans to bring additional teenagers to the converted man camp amid safety concerns at the facility. The AP also reported the local officials were notified about that decision by email, but County Judge Terry Johnson said he learned of it after receiving calls from reporters. As of 5 p.m. Thursday, Johnson said he and Sheriff David Kreiner had not received an email or call from HHS. A city spokesperson said Mayor Patrick Payton did not receive any notice from HHS either. They're very, very quiet, Johnson said, of the federal departments involved in the facility. They answer when they want to, and only what they want to. 53 of the 485 minors have tested positive for COVID-19, and one child has a suspected case of chickenpox. He said all the migrants will now be vaccinated for chickenpox, but he does not know if they're receiving the coronavirus vaccine as well. One child was taken to Midland Memorial Hospital earlier in the week. Local leaders said they didn't have details on the teenager's condition or illness. Additionally, the AP reported an official at the facility said there weren't enough clothes for the children, and some teenagers were wearing the same shirts and pants for several days. However, Johnson said HHS and the American Red Cross told local leaders they'd purchased new clothes for the minors and declined donations from area churches and nonprofits that offered assistance. The Field's Edge set to begin construction of Tiny Home Village. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. The Field's Edge will begin construction of a tiny home village for Midland's homeless on Monday after breaking ground on infrastructure at the site last year. After 5 years of challenging and rewarding work, the Field's Edge will begin the on-site construction of their permanent supportive tiny home community for Midland's chronically homeless on March 22nd, the release states. TFE officially broke ground on the village in November 2020, but substantial off-site infrastructure was necessary before beginning construction on-site. Phase one of the project will include the first 10 tiny homes, including a missional residence, a workshop, and a community hall, which includes a space for mental and physical health care, a market, and a multi-purpose area. Construction of the first phase is expected to be completed in November, and volunteer opportunities will be available throughout construction. Roads leading to the village and a 1.5-mile-long water line connecting to the city's water system were completed last month. A capital campaign to fund the first phase of the project ended Thursday after they raised the last $21,000 of the $4.3 million needed for initial construction. The nonprofit will now focus on fundraising for case management, job training, mental and physical health care, and later phases. The Field's Edge houses 4 residents in off-site RV trailers. They will become the first to live in the tiny homes. 5 other chronically homeless Midlanders will join them at the village by the end of the year. Future phases of the village will include a total of 100 homes on the 23-acre property in southwest Midland near Interstate 20 and Loop 250, as well as a shared vegetable garden and amphitheater for community events. The homes will be for single homeless individuals who have been living in Midland County for at least a year. The village is modeled after the community's first village in Austin that houses 170 residents. The Field's Edge founder, John Mark Eccles, and his wife, Brianna, lived at Community First for 4 months to learn how to bring the concept to Midland. The village will be the setting for a transformative and empowering community and a forged family of Midlanders to walk alongside their new neighbors to cultivate the home, the release states. City discusses top priorities at council retreat by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. City of Midland department heads discuss their goals for the next fiscal year and beyond at Thursday's council retreat after not meeting for a retreat in 2020 because of the pandemic. The special meeting on Thursday was a fresh start for the city after most of the last year was devoted to the pandemic. Mayor Patrick Payton said during the meeting that there was no such thing as normal city business in 2020. Below is a summary of the presentations given by the department heads. Engineering Services. One of the main priorities for engineering services will be the replacement of the city's stormwater system, according to Director Jose Ortiz. He said storm pipelines are more than 50 years old and past their shelf lives. His recommendation is to use reinforced concrete pipes. Wadley, Garfield, and Fairgrounds Road will be focuses for stormwater pipe replacements and repaving, he said. Improving Wadley Road's drainage system could cost $19 million in Phase 1, plus an additional $37 million for Phases 2 and 3. Ortiz would also like to create an in-house design team for roads and neighborhood traffic management program, both of which would need approval from the council. Police Department. The Midland Police Department is experiencing a 20% staffing shortage, according to Chief Seth Herman. He said there has been an uptick in applicants since last year's oil market crash. They hope to have 195 sworn officers and 83 civilian employees this fiscal year. Herman said they also plan to expand the usable space for evidence storage and expand the Community Relations Unit in partnership with the Department of Public Safety and Midland County Sheriff's Office. Fire Department. The fire department is planning to hire 23 people, according to Chief Charles Blumenauer, in part to help staff stations 5 and 11 that will be opening this year. He said in the next 10 years, the department will seek to build a new training facility and upgrade or replace four stations. Utilities. Utilities Director Carl Crago said one project his team will focus on this year is construction in the Northeast Water and Wastewater System, which will bring water to that area of the city. They will also complete a rate study this year to prepare for a debt increase in 2930, he said. Additionally, Crago recommended the council set a policy ending water tap installations for new developments. The city provides the service for no charge to new houses, which Crago says costs the city $6,000 per home in new developments. Midland International Airport. The airport has $58 million worth of current and upcoming projects, most of which are federally funded, according to Director Justine Ruff. She said they plan to go out to bid this year on an $8 million rehab project that includes new bathrooms, carpet, paint, and roof repairs. The project might be funded by CARES grant. They also plan to secure the land to the east of the airport for future development and purchase snow equipment to keep the airport running during winter storms. MPD investigates fatal hit and run near Midland International. A 33-year-old Odessa man died Thursday morning after a crash on Highway 80 near Midland International Airport, according to Midland Police. An MPD report stated that at approximately 2:39 a.m., members of the Midland Police Department and Midland Fire Department were dispatched to a vehicle crash with persons pinned in the 10,000 block of West Highway 80. Officers arrived on the scene and located a gray 2009 Honda on the South Service Road. The vehicle was found to be driven by 33-year-old Jacob Miranda Martinez of Odessa. He was pronounced dead at the scene. The Midland Police Department, Traffic Unit, and Crime Scene Investigators responded to the scene. During the course of the investigation, it was determined that the Honda was traveling eastbound on the South Service Road, where it collided with an unknown vehicle. The vehicle the Honda collided with fled the scene prior to officers' arrival. Next of kin has been notified. The investigation is ongoing. If the public has any information, they are asked to call the MPD non-emergency line at 685-7108 or Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS. Curbside Bistro Chef to appear on the Food Network's Beat Bobby Flay by J.C. Lewis. jacy.lewis at hearstmp.com. Curbside Bistro's chef and owner Alejandro Barrientos will be appearing on Food Network's Beat Bobby Flay. At 7 p.m. on April 22nd, Chef Alejandro will be featured on Season 27, Episode 11, according to Facebook post. Curbside Bistro was originally a food truck, but is now located at 3816 Andrews Highway in Odessa. The restaurant serves gourmet sliders, fries, chicken wings, tacos, and more. Barrientos also opened the Beer Barn, previously the Barbecue Barn, next door to the restaurant, which is a drive-through convenience store serving beer, energy sticks, micheladas, fountain drinks, and other beverages. This is a dream come true, and it's all due to the blessing from God and the amazing support from our community, Barrientos said in his Facebook post. Obituaries and death notices. Cecil Lynn Townley, 81, of Stanton, passed away Thursday, March 18th. Graveside services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 20th at the Evergreen Cemetery Chapel. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Gilbreth Funeral Home. Cheryl Lynn Deary Seaman departed this life on March 15th at her home in Midland. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, March 19th at Bethel Missionary Baptist Church in Midland, with graveside services following at Serenity Memorial Cemetery in Midland. Anna L. Washam, 73, of Midland, passed away on Monday, March 15th. No services are scheduled.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, March 19th, 2021. Section A. Pfluger to hold town hall. U.S. Representative August Pfluger, Republican, Texas, will hold a town hall in Midland at 5:30 p.m. Monday at the Bush Convention Center. The event is free and open to the public. Pfluger is expected to address several topics, including a resolution he and fellow Texas Congressman Representative Michael McCaul recently introduced, demanding that Russian authorities immediately release former U.S. Marine Trevor Reed, a 29-year-old Texan they say was sentenced in July to 9 years in a Russian prison under false pretenses. Lissa Bell, Pfluger's communications director, said he will make a few remarks and the remainder will be questions and answers from the community. Pfluger has also been outspoken about his frustration over the decision of the Department of Health and Human Services to establish an emergency intake site for unaccompanied alien children apprehended at the southern border at the Cotton Logistics site in Midland. Federal officials made the decision without informing or consulting with state and local officials in advance. Bell said the representative asked Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas about the issue in a hearing Wednesday. Mayorkas skirted around the questions, but did concede it was a failure of his department not to communicate with local officials, Bell said. She added that Pfluger sent 10 official questions Wednesday, but has not yet gotten a response. Pfluger has been in and out of District 11 of late, and Bell said she doesn't see that letting up. He's absolutely 100 miles an hour all the time, Bell said. She added that Pfluger has 6 district offices and stays in touch with county judges and sheriffs in his 29-county area. Social distancing is encouraged, and there is no mask requirement, just personal choice. UTPB Fountain Duck Returns by Ruth Campbell. After a hiatus due to the pandemic, the University of Texas Permian Basin Fountain Duck is back and tweeting. Dean of Student Success Michael Frawley said the break wasn't planned, but the yellow rubber waterfowl is interactive. He travels and gets his photo taken in all manner of locales, but COVID-19 put paid to that. About a month ago, Frawley began tweeting from the account again. This has been a hard year. I interact with my students a lot. I'm not a dean who sits in their office. I'm out there all the time because that's how I find out how I can help them. And with the students gone and me not being able to feed off their energy a little bit, because they feed off mine and I feed off theirs, it was a tough year. Part of that tough year was the Falcon Duck. Didn't have as good of a role, so he kind of disappeared until about a month ago when we finally started doing stuff again. Football started and things like that, Frawley said. Dean of Students Corey Benson reached out to Frawley because they were trying to put out some information about the homecoming events and football games. He asked if Frawley could tweet it out as the Fountain Duck. So the Duck account started tweeting out again. We're running a big student success campaign that we're using him for right now. We're doing a duck hunt across campus. There are ducks hidden all over campus right now with little numbers hidden on the bottom of them. If you bring them in here, we're signing you up for your advising appointment and giving you a prize. Benson is also glad of the ducks' return. As the weather warms up and as we begin the spring season, we are excited to welcome back the UTPB Fountain Duck to campus, Benson said in a text message. The Fountain Ducks bring a sense of joy to our community and offer an opportunity for students to win prizes by finding and bringing the ducks to the Office of the Dean of Student Success, he added. Frawley noted that the university and his department have done well by students this past year. Our IT, Information Technology, department has been amazing. I was worried that we weren't going to be able to do stuff because it's tough to make that pivot, but our technology has been really good. So all of our tutoring, all of our mentoring, all of our student success work went online, Frawley said. It wasn't the same. So the duck, he's been wildly popular this past week. I've been putting out some of the worst puns you've ever seen, Frawley said. When the volleyball team made the playoffs, he said he tweeted how ducky it was. The students are coming by and they're picking up the ducks again. They're showing up around campus. If you walk around different campus offices, like if you wander past Career Center, on top of the water cooler, there are a bunch of ducks because they migrate to every office. I've started sneaking them into the provost's office and hid a couple in the provost's office, which he found after about 3 weeks. The ducks are all over the place because the students love them, Frawley said. He added that UTPB has a unique student body. We don't have very many traditional students, Frawley said. We do not have a lot of students whose only job is to go to college. All of our students have families. They're working two jobs. College isn't the same experience. This is fun. It livens things up a little, and it makes my work in student success a lot easier. A bright spot of the pandemic is the collaboration it has prompted between offices. The connections that I've been able to build with the Dean of Students Office and Student Life and the Registrar and Accounting, not that they were strained before, because they absolutely weren't, but we've all become a lot more adaptable, Frawley said. We reach out to each other a lot more. We talk a lot more than we ever did, and that starts from the top. President Sandra Woodley has pushed this since she's come in, and it's helped. She's changed the culture around here. He noted that UTPB always has a robust online program. In reality, it's been better during the pandemic for online students, because since we pushed all of our offerings online and all of our support online, there are a lot more available because we've had to develop it so quickly, Frawley said. If they try something new, he said he wants them to make sure it is sustainable. Advising also has improved. They went from a walk-in model to a caseload model where advisors have certain students and they get to know them and build relationships. As soon as that went into place, everything shut down. But through Microsoft Teams and the technology, they can check in on them. Those advisors have become kind of our frontline defense here. They find out sometimes sooner than anybody but the faculty when there's a problem, and we've trained them to help them with those problems, and because they know their students. If someone who usually responds in an hour doesn't respond after 3 days, bells and whistles go off that there's a problem, and they reach out to our various systems to issue alerts to get people to contact that student, Frawley said. We're a lot more responsive now because of the pandemic. Dr. Murray goes to Austin. Superintendent to urge lawmakers to help ECISD keep all its CARES funds. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray is heading to Austin Monday to meet with local legislators, Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and others about hanging on to the federal CARES money earmarked for the district. Over the last several months, Murray said, the federal government has approved having school districts receive funding through the CARES Act. That money has been used to provide personal protective equipment for teachers, administrators, and children. We've used that money to provide resources to children and families. We've used it to close the broadband gap, the digital divide that exists within our community. We've used those dollars to support additional cleaning efforts that have happened on all of our campuses, pre-K through 12th grade. So we've spent all of that money on ensuring that between last March and May, our campuses were well taken care of, Murray said. The CARES Act 1 money was followed by CARES Act 2 and now CARES Act 3, Murray said. It is anticipated that an additional $25 million was designated for Ector County Independent School District as a part of CARES Act 2, and up to $75 million was designated for ECISD in CARES Act 3. However, we're not certain that all of that money is going to make it to our district because of some decisions or considerations being made at the state level right now. So on Monday, I'll be traveling to Austin to talk to not only our local representatives, but also the governor, lieutenant governor, and others as we make sure that they understand the significant challenges that we're going to face over the next several years to address the learning loss that our students have incurred over the last year because of the pandemic. Those dollars need to be added in addition to the dollars that we already use to operate school. As it is, in order for our students to make up that significant amount of learning, it's going to require additional investments, investments such as extending the school year. This summer, elementary students will have a chance to attend school for an additional 30 days. For an elementary school to serve their students for another 30 days, it's almost $1 million. And multiplied by the number of elementaries that we have in our system, that's a significant amount of money, Murray said. He added that he would like to provide some high-dosage tutoring to students this summer and throughout the next several years. That's going to require additional funding. Again, the federal government has designated those dollars not only for ECISD, but also for school districts across the country. We just want to make sure that those dollars indeed flow to the school district, because the work that we have to do over the next several years is going to be significant to make sure that children of this community are well taken care of in response to COVID-19. Murray also touched on plans to add sixth grade to Austin Montessori and graduation for the class of 2021 and 2020. Austin is currently pre-K through fifth grade. That's just one more way that ECISD is responding to the opportunities that have been expressed to us by our families. We pride ourselves on giving our families choices and options as we educate children throughout this community. We are excited to be able to expand Austin Montessori to provide more options for kids as they move into that middle school environment, Murray said. The item will be up for board approval at the March 23rd meeting. He added that making Austin pre-K through 8th grade also has been discussed, but the district would need more space for that. Austin has space for 6th grade because up until a few years ago, elementary schools went through 6th grade. Junior highs, now middle schools, were 7th through 9th, and high schools were 10th through 12th. Murray said the district is in the process of conducting a study of all of the choice options in ECISD. We want to be a district of choice, he added. We want to provide the choices that our students and our families want for their children. We need to revisit those choices on a fairly regular basis and make sure our choices are indeed the choices that moms and dads want to make for their children. Graduation for the classes of 2021 will be on Memorial Day weekend in their traditional locations, including Ratliff Stadium. The only adjustment we anticipate making at this time would be the number of guests that each of our seniors is allowed to invite, Murray said. We will be monitoring the health conditions during the month of May, and if conditions warrant that we limit the number of participants, then we will do that. But we do plan on having a very traditional graduation experience for the class of 2021. In addition, district officials plan to have graduation for the class of 2020. We promised those students we would. Those dates have not been finalized. We put a poll out to all the graduates of 2020 and have listened to their feedback, so we're now working on some dates that make sense for those students. Many of those students are off at college or off in different experiences and will have to return if they want to engage in that opportunity. We're excited to be able to offer a traditional graduation experience for the class of 2020, as well as for the class of 2021, Murray said. The class of 2020 had about 2,000 members. Our goal would be to have a separate experience for each of the graduates. A lot of it really depends on the number of kids, and clearly if we've already got 750 that have said yes, and those are the students who responded to the survey, there are probably double that are interested. So it may end up being one experience for each of the 5 separate high schools. That's the goal, at least, Murray said. COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Ector County, 16,495 total cases, 345 deaths. Midland County, 16,788 total cases, 256 deaths. Texas, 2,742,274 total cases, 46,827 deaths. U.S., 29,431,658 total confirmed and 535,217 deaths. COVIDinthebasin.com or tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Vaccines. The Ector County Health Department on Texas Avenue is administering COVID-19 Pfizer vaccines first dose today while supplies last. The vaccines are for health care workers, school and child care employees, and anyone with a chronic condition, and for those 50 years and older. To schedule an appointment, call 432-498-4141, option 0. Visit tinyurl.com/3UF75558 or tinyurl.com/WWWPAJD7. Medical Center Hospital is administering COVID-19 first dose Pfizer vaccines from 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, and from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at MCH Urgent Care Locations, 3001 JBS Parkway and 6030 West University. Vaccines are for Phase 1A frontline workers and residents at long-term care facilities and Phase 1B, most at risk and for ages 65 and older. No appointment is necessary and walk-ins are welcome. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. Visit mchodessa.com/coronavirus. Odessa Regional Medical Center on 6th Street is administering COVID-19 vaccines. To check on availability or to make an appointment, call 432-582-8549 or visit www.odessaregionalmedicalcenter.org/vaccine. ORMC will contact those who received the first dose Pfizer at Ratliff to set their second or booster shot appointment. John Garcia, MD, PA West Texas Wellness Clinic on East 11th is administering COVID-19 vaccines while supplies last. To make an appointment or for more information, call 582-0300 or visit www.facebook.com/JGarcia123 or WestTexasWellness.com. Walgreens, tinyurl.com/YHR6NEUD. HEB Pharmacies, vaccine.heb.com. CVS, CVS.com. The CVS Pharmacy app or call 800-746-7287. United Supermarkets, www.unitedsupermarkets.com/COVID-19-vaccine. Walmart and Sam's Club. www.walmart.com/CP/1228302 or www.samsclub.com/pharmacy. MCH gets maternal designation. Medical Center Hospital has been designated as a Level 3 subspecialty care maternal facility by the Texas Department of State Services, according to an MCH news release. The state designation is valid for a 3-year period that will expire March 1, 2024. MCH is currently the only hospital in the Permian Basin with a Level 3 maternal facility. We are proud to offer the highest level of maternity care in the area, Medical Center Health System Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Abbott Timmons said. Medical Center offers many things to enhance a family's delivery experience as we partner with our amazing physician providers. The staff at Medical Center are beyond compare and are one of the key pieces of receiving this prestigious recognition. To achieve a Level 3 designation, MCH must meet all standards of care relating to the treatment of pregnant and postpartum patients in Texas, actively advocate for maternal system development, and work to improve the availability and quality of maternal care as an active member of Texas J Regional Advisory Council and Perinatal Care Region. Support More Badges. The Support More Badges has been scheduled from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at 3 different Chick-fil-A locations. The Odessa Police Department will be selling raffle tickets at the Chick-fil-A located at 3805 East 42nd, and the Ector County Sheriff's Office will be at the Chick-fil-A located at 4109 Faudry Road. Raffle tickets will be sold for a Polaris Ranger 500, $9,500 value, a Bergara Premier 6.5 Creedmoor Series rifle, $1,650 value, and a Primo Oval LG 300 ceramic charcoal grill, $1,160 value. Support More Badges is part of and helps support the 8th annual Bustin' for Badges Clay Shoot fundraiser set for April 15th and 16th at Windwalker Farms Sporting Clays in Stanton. Bustin' for Badges benefits local law enforcement, Odessa Police Department, Midland Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, and Midland County Sheriff's Office, and helps pay for much needed equipment. The raffle tickets are $20 each or six for $100. They may be purchased by dropping by the OPD front desk, 205 North Grant, during regular business hours, or by calling 432-335-3322. Visit tinyurl.com/SSM95PNC or tinyurl.com/PKURWEWT. To register for Bustin' for Badges or for more information, visit bustinforbadges.org or call 432-571-3462. Seliger wants legislation to notify local entities of intake facilities. In the wake of hundreds of migrant children being detained in Midland County and the lack of information about it, State Senator Kel Seliger has a bill set that would have private property owners notify cities or counties if a detention facility is going to pop up. Seliger, Republican Amarillo, said Thursday, if a facility is going to be opened for minors, it should have wastewater and drinking water available and on-site medical and dining facilities and security. A news conference on the emergency intake site at the Cotton Logistics Man Camp was held Monday. Midland County officials didn't know about it until Sunday. The deadline to file bills passed a week ago, Seliger said. I will have to have a supermajority to get a bill referred to committee after the deadline, and it just depends on what my colleagues think, he said in an interview. Asked what committee it would go to, Seliger said, you never know that before a bill goes to committee, the lieutenant governor decides. I'm perfectly happy with state affairs, local government, even natural resources, since we are talking about water. It doesn't matter to me. It will go to a good committee. That I don't worry about, Seliger said. He said they didn't know this was happening until after the filing deadline. I'm getting lots of phone calls and lots of media calls. People are concerned about these children who are essentially being dumped on our border. I think at facility in Midland, they are as young as 12 and as old as 16. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality just got in the facility today, March 18th, and I don't have a report yet, and so we'll see what happens, Seliger said. I think I may be there tomorrow, March 19th, or Saturday, just to see for myself and ask some of these questions, Seliger said. He added that he's not sure they will let him in. Asked if he had heard anything about migrant children being placed in Ector County, Seliger said he had not. Assuming that there are privately owned man camps in Ector County, Seliger said, it's a real possibility, but I guess they're not going to tell us until they're on their way, which is probably what I object to more than anything else. The county judge and sheriff deserve to know. He added that he wants to make sure that anyone with COVID is quarantined and being observed as he has been told they are. I don't want to go into a quarantined facility, but I want to make sure that that is the case because this was set up to really provide homes for oil field workers. I'm sure that there are some medical facilities there, so I'm encouraged. I just want to see, Seliger said. Program Aims to Improve Engineering Outcomes by Ruth Campbell. With a view to increasing enrollment, graduation rates, retaining and recruiting and retained students, the University of Texas Permian Basin College of Engineering has started a new initiative called EMSTEP. The acronym stands for Engineering Minority Student Engagement Project. Established in October 2020, with help from a three-year, $750,000 U.S. Department of Education grant, EMSTEP also aims to engage, mentor, and tutor students. The University of Texas Permian Basin is a minority-serving institution that includes a large percentage of Hispanic students. The Permian Basin region has a 58% Latino population, the information said. Retention rates for the College of Engineering students at UTPB were in the range of 50 to 70% during 2014 to 2018. EMSTEP offers a Saturday Academy, peer-led group, professional lecture series, freshman seminar, and summer research projects. Four courses that students struggle with, withdraw, take incomplete from, or fail, are Fundamentals of Electric Circuit Analysis, Engineering Mechanics, Statics and Dynamics, Introduction to Fluid Mechanics, and Introduction to Thermodynamics, information from UTPB says. Students in these courses are from four engineering disciplines of chemical, electrical, mechanical, and petroleum engineering. The courses are being taught in the Saturday Academy, and 20 students are working as peer group leaders. The peer group leaders are basically peer mentors. We have hired a whole bunch of peer mentors. Peer mentors will contact the people who need help, said Mohsin Jamali, professor and acting department chair in the Department of Electrical Engineering. We assign each peer mentor five students. They work virtually or in person throughout the semester, and basically they will help them in that particular course, plus any other thing they have a concern with. Motivating lectures are being offered in the professional lecture series, and an eight-week summer research project also is offered. Jamali and Sepir Arorbabi acting chair of the Chemical Engineering Department, said the program is unique to the College of Engineering and in the country as a whole. We are trying to address every aspect that will help the retention of the students in the college. We collect participation and progress data and then showcase the results with the aim of improving the outcome, our Bobby said. Registration open for summer programs. The Permian Basin Petroleum Museum in Midland has opened registration for its summer programs. Movie Maker Mondays will be held on the 2nd and 4th Monday of June and July. Each Movie Maker Monday will feature a movie, hands-on experiments, engineering challenges, and games. Movie Maker Mondays are held from 1 to 5 p.m. and are for students ages 6 through 12. Cost is $10 for museum members and $15 for non-members. Watch The Croods, New Age, Onward, Trolls World Tour, and Scoob with us. During the summer science camps, students will work together to do fun experiments, creative activities, and robotic design. Camps for students ages 6 through 8 will be held in June. The cost is $60 for Petroleum Museum members and $75 for non-members. Topics will include Full Steam Ahead to Infinity and Beyond and Splash into Science. For ages 8 through 12, the museum will be offering 2 4-day, half-day science camps in July. The cost is $80 for museum members and $100 for non-members. Topics include Lego Mini Masters, Dream Park, and 3D Adventurers. PetroleumMuseum.org. Local News Roundup. Police searching for men involved in credit card abuse. OPD is looking for two men who reportedly spent more than $1,100 on a stolen credit card. The reported incident happened February 25th when a complainant detailed that unknown subjects used her credit card and spent more than $1,109, OPD press release stated. One of the transactions reportedly occurred at the United Market, located at 2751 North County Road West, as two men used the complainant's credit card to spend $341.75 and left in a maroon Chevrolet pickup. OPD has released a photo of the men and the maroon pickup that can be seen at tinyurl.com/YRWA5S3. Anyone with information about the stolen credit card is asked to contact Detective Y. Madrano at 432-333-3641 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 21-0038. Police looking for driver connected to hit and run. The Odessa Police Department is searching for a driver of a black SUV that was reportedly involved in a hit and run. The reported incident happened around 6:30 p.m. March 10th in the Music City Mall parking lot located at 4101 East 42nd, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed the driver of a newer model black GMC SUV collided with a 29-year-old woman and fled the scene without meeting necessary requirements. The victim was transported to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. OPD has released photos of the black SUV that can be seen at tinyurl.com/952ZRNUK. Anyone with information about the hit and run is asked to contact hit and run investigator M. Stewart at 432-335-5758 or Odessa Crime Stoppers 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 21-0003842. death notices for Friday, March 19th. Santos Carrasco. Santos Carrasco, 71, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March 16th. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Friday, March 19th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Odessa 2 Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Father Fernando Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Pablo Morales Gonzalez. Pablo Morales Gonzalez, 69, of Odessa, died Wednesday, March 17th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ricky Lynn Rodriguez. Ricky Lynn Rodriguez, 49, of Odessa, died Thursday, March 11th. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 20th at Good Shepherd Catholic Church in Sheffield. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, March 13th, 2021. Names in the news. Dean's Honor Roll. Abilene. Abilene Christian University has named local and area students who have been named to the Fall Dean's List. To qualify for the Dean's Honor Roll, students must be registered for 12 or more credit hours and earn a GPA of 3.6 or higher. The following local students made the list. Odessa. Delilah Olivas, a freshman majoring in art. Juan Mendoza, a junior majoring in biology. Chase Van Riper, a senior majoring in biology. Emily Garcia, a freshman majoring in nursing. Karis Cox, a junior majoring in theater. Juan Rivera, a sophomore majoring in theater. And Brooke Adams, a junior majoring in psychology.
This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. Page 2, read. Military Roll of Honor. U.S. Navy photo by Burl Palmer, NTAG San Antonio Public Affairs / released. The photo shows Engine Man Second Class Jesus Escobar of Midland, a talent scout assigned to Navy Recruiting Station McAllen, Talent Acquisition Onboarding Center, TAOC, Alamo City, was awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Achievement by Commander Michael Files, Commanding Officer, Navy Talent Acquisition Group, NTAG, NTAG, San Antonio at the recruiting station. For his professional achievement during fiscal year 2020, he was recognized as NTAG San Antonio's Rookie Enlisted Recruiter of the Year, Diversity Recruiter of the Year, and Enlisted Female Upper Middle Group Recruiter of the Year. Escobar joined America's Navy in 2013 after graduating from Midland Lee High School and became a Navy recruiter in 2019. It feels good to know that sailors are being recognized for their hard work, said Escobar. It was definitely a team effort, and I want to thank my leading petty officer and others who mentored me. NTAG San Antonio's area of responsibility includes two TAOCs, which manage more than 34 Navy recruiting stations and Navy officer recruiting stations spread throughout 144,000 square miles of Central and South Texas territory. Escobar is holding 3 large plaques.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. Education section. Midland College grad, now managing partner of local craft beer company. From Midland College Profiles by Rebecca Bell. Midland College graduate Jeff Thomas and his 4 partners opened Tall City Brewing Company on November 15, 2019. Despite the setbacks with COVID and a dramatic decline in the local energy industry, Thomas said that business is booming for the craft beer brewery. "It comes down to the quality of the beer," Thomas explained. Our brewmaster, Jack Sparks, does an awesome job. He's from Dallas and was working in Miami, but wanted to get back to Texas. We were lucky to find him. Thomas, along with brothers Eric and Nicholas Schmidt, had the idea of starting the company in 2016. The three met and became friends in 2006 when working as landmen. After we had the initial idea and filed for our LLC in 2016, it definitely wasn't a fast process to open, Thomas recalled. During the time we were acquiring resources, we met Jared and Josh Sparks, who also wanted to open a craft beer place in Midland. In fact, they heard that we were going to start the business and reached out to us on Facebook. We hit it off, and so the five of us became partners. Thomas is the managing partner and oversees the daily operations of Tall City Brewing Company. In addition to Thomas and Jack Sparks, the company employs 8 part-time taproom servers. Of course, as Thomas explained, there's also a brew assistant named Marshall, which is Jack's dog, and even has a beer named after him. Thomas said that he wants Tall City Brewing Company to have a warm, welcoming, and laid-back atmosphere. This is for customers as well as employees. All of our employees are craft beer connoisseurs, he said. I encourage new ideas from them. In fact, all of the beer flavors and their creative names, which have their roots in something that is unique to Midland, were developed by Thomas, the partners, and the employees. They include 5-Hour Drive Honey Blonde Ale, derived from the fact that Midland is in the middle of everywhere, but it just takes 5 hours to get there. Haboob Hefeweizen, named after the giant West Texas sandstorms, and Bird Lady American Pale Ale, a tribute to Midge Erskine, who lived across the street from Tall City Brewing Company and took care of injured and exotic birds. Thomas said that the flavors for the beers are all the creation of brewmaster Sparks. We just tell him what flavor profiles we want, and he knocks it right out. My theory is that the best beers come after 2 beers, the worst after 3 beers. Tall City Brewing Company can accommodate 300 people in their tap room, and they also have a large patio. The establishment prides itself on being family-friendly. We aren't a bar, Thomas explained. We close at 10 p.m. In addition to beers, Tall City offers soft drinks and wine on tap. Thomas said that plans are to begin selling a hard cider in the near future. The company is all about promoting Midland small businesses, and they invite locally owned food truck vendors to park on the premises during operating hours so customers can purchase food. Thomas was born and raised in West Texas. He graduated from Midland High in 2001 and attended Midland College from 2001 to 2003. After graduating from Midland College, he transferred to Tech and received a bachelor's degree in public relations marketing with an English minor in 2006. I really enjoyed my time in Midland College, Thomas said. I don't think I was ready to go off to a large university right after high school grad, and I'm thankful that I did not. I made a lot of new friends at MC, and the professors were very personable. It was nice to be able to email a professor and get a personal response and receive help. Midland College is very, very important to Midland. It offers a premium education at an affordable price. It is a privilege to have a college of this caliber in Midland, and I'm proud of the fact that I'm a graduate and chose to remain in Midland to raise my family and start a business. Thomas's wife, Brittany, has also lived in Midland most of her life. She's a graduate of Lee and has an Associate of Applied Science degree in nursing from MC. The couple have 3 children. Thomas said that growing up in Midland, coupled with his public relations degree from Texas Tech, helped to prepare him to manage Tall City Brewing Company. I understand Midlanders and know how to market the business. For about a year, Tall City's beers have been available on tap at various Midland restaurants. In January, Tall City Brewing Company began releasing cans of their 2 most popular flavors, 5-Hour Drive, Honey Blonde Ale, and Haboob Hefeweizen, at Midland and Odessa HEB stores and West Texas convenience stores. The future of Tall City Brewing Company is quite promising. Thomas said that the plans are to expand brewing capacity by adding more tanks, and he looks forward to offering more live entertainment on the premises soon. Thanks to Thomas and his partners, Midlanders are now able to enjoy local craft beer in a family-friendly atmosphere.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.